The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond!
Beyond.
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 Really
beyond. Beyond.
Stop. Beyond.
Stop. Beyond.
Stop.
Beyond.
Stop.
Beyond.
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 Really,
beyond.
Awful.
Beyond.
Stop. Please stop it. Good Lord. That gets worse every week.
Beyond.
Welcome
or
to
get
Podcast
better.
Beyond. It gets worse.
Podcast what?
Podcast.
Beyond.
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 Please,
beyond.
Please stop. Please stop. Podcast Beyond, episode 410. It's a PlayStation podcast, I think. Sometimes. We try. I'm Max Scoville. Joining me, Andrew Goldfarb.
Brap, brap.
Brian Altano.
I'm sad.
And Jared Petty.
I don't have a pithy anecdote or catchphrase.
I thought we gave you one.
You did. I don't know. Preach it? I don't know. Testify.
You just yell sweet code in as loud as you can.
Yeah, just squeak it in!
Yeah. All right. Marty Sliva is normally here, but he's out having his beard rewoven.
Yeah.
Is he in Iowa?
Wisconsin. He's in his childhood bedroom, and he hasn't had a drink in days, is the last text I got from him.
Oh, so he's in a detox prison.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Wow, all
so
right.
If you're listening to this at home, never become anything like that.
All right,
yep.
So
and know how old you are.
We are a little bit recording with a fire under our ass and a gun to our heads because we are doing this a day late because last night there was the big TGS Sony press event, press keynote conference thing, whatever you call that. Goldfarb, you stayed up real late past your bedtime.
I did.
Pay attention to what they announced. What did they announce?
I'm a real tired boy. They announced a lot. I guess we can pretty much go through all these.
I will say this is probably one of the biggest press conferences I've ever done at TGS. Like, tons of huge stuff.
Well, it's really interesting how this conference has evolved because it was the SCEJA conference, which is like very for Asian territories. And now it's kind of become these further reaching announcements. Like a couple years ago, we got like PS Vita TV, and then that slowly ended up coming west. And it's just interesting watching. This is sort of like, it's almost like cheating. It's like getting like Cliff's Notes for what they will announce in the West.
Yep.
So I think like their Paris Games Week conference, I'm assuming we'll see most of the things here that only apply to Japan, we'll see apply to the West.
I think a lot of that is because it's been sort of the last 2 or 3 years specifically in this console generation, it's felt like Sony is no longer really, or the PlayStation isn't really just like a Japanese thing anymore. Like, the PlayStation is huge. It is the biggest, the best-selling console in the world right now by a very large margin. So any announcements you see anywhere, like, pretty much have to extend to us because you're going to have a large enough group of people being like, give me that.
Yeah, well, and I think, so that's a perfect segue into the first thing, which is that they dropped the price of the PS4 in Japan by what's equivalent to roughly $100.
Yeah.
Which is gigantic. Like, if this happens in the U.S., that's a very big deal because, like, the install base is already really, really big.
Yeah.
And this can make it potentially a lot bigger.
Yeah, and I looked it up. It's about time. Historically, if you look at last generation, it's been out about 2 years now. We're getting up on that mark. It was about the two-year point. They dropped the price of higher-end models earlier than this last generation because they were like, oh, my gosh, we overpriced this thing.
And because they had a bunch of weird
Bunch of SKUs. Yeah, but now this thing with one main SKU, they didn't actually drop their lowest price SKU until about 2 years in, and that's what we're looking at now.
And if you think about the PS3 era, like, they dropped the SKU, they dropped the price because they had to.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't doing well. They don't really need to do this right now, so it's kind of awesome that they are.
Like, yeah. Well, and it's so competitive.
No.
Like, it's
to back this up for a second, this is in Japan. Wasn't it more expensive in Japan, or wasn't it like... They frequently do that, where it's like stuff is if you do convert it, and even with the exchange rate in place, they charge more for it.
And even in like Australia, they charge a lot more for games and hardware than they do here equivalently. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, that's the thing, right? Like, even the interesting thing about any of the news here is, like, even if it is specific to Asia or even specific to Japan, it's actually really interesting because, like, even if this just evens it out with mm-hmm. the U.S. price, like, that's still really smart and competitive.
Yeah, this is also, mm-hmm. like, this even if it's just a price drop in Japan, this is just one more nail in the Xbox's coffin over there.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's cool. Hopefully that comes over this a ways. Other big thing is the wonderful, exciting Project Morpheus has been renamed to PlayStation VR, which is
like a boring name, but it makes it so it reminds me of Kinect was Project Natal for the longest time,
mm-hmm. right?
And we all called it that for like 2 years, and then they actually named it, and everyone was like, "Oh, that's so weird." And then you get used to it. Like, this makes sense. This always was going to be called PlayStation VR. Like, that is a perfectly just like accurate title, and they were never going to release a product called Project Morpheus, you know, like
even if it had like Lawrence Fishburne packaging,
yeah, exactly.
That would have been amazing. A Cowboy Curtis on every box.
It's really interesting to me that I feel like I forgot that was a code name.
I think it's very smart. It's sort of leveraging their brand name is probably a smart thing to do in a situation where people are there's still so much uncertainty mm-hmm. like around VR, like calling something Morpheus mm-hmm. and putting on a shelf, people are like, what the hell is that?
Well, it's entirely self-explanatory. We also heard that the Vita was kind of a weird thing on its own, because like what a Vita means life.
Yeah.
Lindsay Lohan has a tattoo that says the Dolce Vita. Why do I know that?
That's a little weird.
And then like the PlayStation 4 was going to be the Orbis for a second,
yeah.
you know? And we were like, oh, maybe it's going to be the Ouroboros. Orbis means round, and then we're just – and Morpheus kind of ties in with that. But it's just sort of like PlayStation VR, it's entirely self-explanatory.
Well, they know we're going to buy it no matter what it's called, the people in the community that listen
to
this.
Well, unless it's like $1,000.
Yeah,
I mean, like, I'm still very curious to see what that thing will cost.
I still call my GameCube the Dolphin.
But I think they're throwing this name out there for a broader audience.
Nintendo Revolution.
Project Cafe.
Project Cafe.
I remember people finding little screenshots of like a stupid coffee cup. And they're like, Project Cafe.
Every blog roll image on IGN for like a year and a half was like a steaming coffee mug.
Yeah, it was really stupid.
I forgot about the Dolphin. That window with Chicago for a while.
Yeah, we used pictures of Morpheus from
Metal Gear Solid 5 was Ogre.
But I do know
that's
that
weird. I guess something Vita weird was just NGP when they announced
it. Oh, God, next gen portable.
Yeah.
But something weird happened on Sunday. I was watching football, watching NFL football for opening week. No, I love the NFL actually.
Were you being bullied in your own home?
No, not at all. Chris Abbott and I sat down watching the football, and they were playing.
That was good.
They were playing with an Oculus on the sportscast. It's like the color commentary guys in the booth, and one of them is wearing an Oculus headset, talking about how the team is using it to do drills with the quarterback. And here you have like sportscaster guy in a suit, not video game dude, kind of ha ha, and he's like, this is awesome. I was like, yep, okay, this is the year. It's coming.
Between that and like fantasy football, which is basically an RPG for jocks,
yep.
like nerds are in everything now.
Just they are.
Awesome. It's pretty awesome. We're all on the same page.
VR is a thing is really weird. Marty was at Tempest, which Beyond fans may know is the place where that Knockin' Boots Live was the day after Beyond 300. And there was the dude at the bar like wearing an Oculus headset and doing some weird tech demo just in the middle of a bar at like 7 p.m. on a Saturday.
Yeah, please steal that guy's wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think Sink or Swim, this is the year. This year or next is the one where everybody's going to be talking about it. And I don't know whether it's going to be like, you know, what was the darn thing that everybody got? Second Life. You know, I don't know if this is going to be the Second Life of this generation where the news cares and nobody else does, or if this is going to be the thing that comes into our living rooms and takes over. I don't know which yet, but I'm really interested to see how it plays out. I want this to work. I love VR stuff.
I think like even if some of these VR sets got the success that Second Life saw, like Second Life was immensely popular with a mm-hmm. very kind of medium-sized group of people.
Yeah,
right? It didn't really take over the world, but it did bubble up in the mainstream a lot. Like New York Times wrote articles.
That's what I mean. Like it became like a big media thing, but the media far outweighed its actual impact on the community. And that's I hope that VR doesn't become that. That's what I'm worried about.
It was like PlayStation Home, where people talked about it more than they actually used
it. Exactly.
We kind of like we talked badly about it, but there was a very healthy, active. I don't know if they were healthy. There was or active.
Yeah.
There was a very specific group of people that play it. They put a lot of time into that. So we'll see.
Yeah. Let's call them Ernest.
Ernest.
Yeah, I think
the importance of being.
It'll. I think the input will matter a lot. I think Oculus Touch is really cool and precise. I haven't really done that much with Morpheus, so you know I want to try it out, especially as it comes closer to being like an actual consumer product. But I don't know. I think it'll depend on how precise you can get and how good it feels, because Oculus Touch is weird as hell looking, but it's smart and like works in a way that I hope Morpheus can.
Yeah. The Oculus Touch, I got to play with that at what was that last thing
Gamescom?
I went to?
PAX?
Was it Games? It was PAX, I think.
Yeah.
Might have been PAX. Yeah, but it was like
probably both.
It was less comfortable to use. Like it felt like I wasn't sure which of my motions were doing something, and it was like it was responsive and everything, but it has a bunch more buttons, and you're using your actual fingers and buttons.
And
at
it's
the
like
same time.
Mittens, like you're not doing like individual finger controls,
like
it's
oven mitts. Like
it's like it's literally oven mitts.
It's but
it's like penguin fingers.
Okay. Well, yeah,
Cooking Mama Simulator for
all
it,
of
then,
these
for...
things. Yeah.
Okay, we have a lot to get through. Bloodborne, you like that game?
I love that
game. I'm pointing
game.
To Brian for you audio listeners.
Yeah, DLC looks awesome, or expansion, whatever.
So it's the Old Hunters. It's $20 November 24th separately, and then early December they're actually going to have, which I think I'm going to pick up and play over Christmas break. Sounds perfect. It's a copy of Bloodborne that includes this. So it's the Old Hunters edition. Mm.
Yep.
Same price, includes this. That's real cool.
Yeah, I tweeted out my five favorite games this year so far this morning. That's on there 100%.
What were the other four?
Metal Gear Solid 5, Super Mario Maker, Lara Croft Go, and Ori and the Blind Forest.
How crazy is it? Like, that's such a good list. How crazy is it that we still have Battlefront, Fallout 4?
Yeah, totally.
Like, there's so many things coming that it's just insane. That's the actual Tomb Raider.
Also, like, it was just weird that, like, my list includes, like, two platforming games. One of them is based on an engine from 1985.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a top-down isometric puzzle game on iOS. It's got a... serious war-based stealth game where you can send animals away in balloons, and it has a nightmare world where you have to fight evil horse monsters with a chainsaw sword.
Speaking of evil horse monsters with a chainsaw
sword, year.
I think it's interesting that they also said Bloodborne sold 2 million copies, which is a lot for, I mean, like, again, I think that's a testament to how big the, or how well the PS4 is doing in general.
Yeah, it's an exclusive.
There are games like this that can do that well in that short of an amount of time that are pretty niche, I think.
It's
like,
also, like, a game that's, like, severely punishing and really pushes people away from it and, like, actively stops you from playing it in the first few hours because it's so frustrating.
I
told a story on the show about how I almost quit it and I came back to it. So
think about when Demon's Souls came out and imagine reading a news story that like a successor to that sold 2 million copies.
Yeah.
That's shocking.
The expansion is just like, it's everything I want in like sort of video game DLC or expansions.
Yeah.
Like it's new environments, it's new bosses, it's new characters, it's new weapons. I don't know how much of it will really carry over to the main game or if that even really matters because like to me, the most amazing thing about Bloodborne was finding a completely new area and traversing it for the first time, completely like unbeknownst to what's going to happen, and fighting bosses that I didn't know existed, and then getting a weapon that I didn't know I could have, and leveling it up and stuff like that. So being able to do that for $20 is really awesome in lieu of getting a sequel anytime soon. So
for sure.
Also, that's going to give it a nice kind of kick in the butt because that's coming out. November 24th, and then it's getting a retail version with the main game, I think, which is like sort of basically Game of the Year edition already.
Yep.
And that's coming out December 4th, Jay-Z's birthday. So if Jay-Z hasn't played Bloodborne,
that's his perfect gift for him. Now he's going to get a million copies of Bloodborne.
And kudos to From for sticking on their guns and producing such a polarizing game and doing it knowing it's polarizing in an age where it's, suits are arguing for safe.
Not only being rewarded by their audience playing, but then in return rewarding their audience by doing something like this.
So
this
great.
Really
for sure.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Keeping it going, Gravity Rush, which I loved a lot.
Did you?
On Vita. Oh, my God, so much. Man, I know Greg gave it a 7 because the targeting stuff, but
I really liked that world. Like, I love the Vita, but I think it does so much better with, like, small games.
Yeah.
You know, something like, I think that the amount of detail and like the depth of field stuff and the accelerometer all at once in something
was really disorienting
that
for me.
Small.
But it was, I think, again, like that was a victim of coming out in early 2012. Yeah. It was it wasn't a launch title, but it was shortly after. And it was that thing where like they felt like they had to put that tech into everything. Yeah. I think a sequel is very exciting.
The game's gorgeous. It's got awesome art direction.
I love that world. I love that art.
Me too. Yeah. And I really want to give it another chance. So
there's a cat in it.
Well,
you hang out with a cat.
If you weren't a fan of the accelerometer stuff, you can get the HD version first. And that's that's coming out February.
February in the U.S., December
Europe,
in... In Japan.
I'm very happy to hear that that's not coming in November.
I know, right? What's cool about it
is basically November 2.
Yeah,
that's true. Mm-hmm. What's cool about it is Bluepoint's doing it, and those are like the guys you want making your HD port. They did Uncharted. They did Eco. They did Metal Gear. Yeah, they do all the best ports. I think they did Titanfall for 360 as well.
Hmm.
I want to give a shout out to the collector's edition there. I'm not usually into collector's editions. I'm not crazy about statues because usually the ones they come packed with are
they're posed in really awkward,
real crappy PVC basically the paint ops of an action figure. This just comes with an action figure, which for some reason just it seems much more reasonable.
Yep. Yeah,
it's a little action figure, a cat, and it comes with a cat and an apple.
Put it on.
I'm pretty excited for that little cat figure. I kind of want that.
It's a nice toy.
But yeah, this is cool, and I don't know. I'm excited to learn more about what that game is.
Yep.
Really confusing announcement. Kingdom Hearts 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue.
Can I just read this? I want to point out it's not Kingdom Hearts 2.8 Final Chapter Prologue. It is Kingdom Hearts Roman numeral 2. Arabic numeral 8. Final Chapter Prologue.
Well, this is a series that's already had a game that was like titled with an equation.
358.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like there's already a long division in place in this series at this point.
This is such an like they've totally gone off the rails into the deep end after year. Like that, this game started off as this sort of synergy between Final Fantasy characters and like the Lion King, and now it's suddenly this experiment in words.
Yeah,
I love
like,
it.
You've got the most single like as far as a Japanese studio making something for a Western audience. You've got the most recognizable Western cartoons.
Yeah.
Side by side with you know basically Final Fantasy characters, and then you've got a naming convention that is a literal puzzle in itself.
Yeah.
Includes Dream Drop Distance, which is hard to say.
Yeah, that's the 3DS game.
Right. Birth by Sleep 0.2, which by all logic should be in pre-alpha stages right now. and Scenes for Unchained X, which I'm pretty sure is a Power Man 5000 album.
Yeah. Didn't we talk about recently there was a job listing for Kingdom Hearts 2.9.
So that's, I mean, that has to be this. I'm hoping.
I hope so, because it's going to
really
be worse.
So. Yeah.
The really confusing thing is like the release scheme of this, because I could be wrong because I haven't super followed this, but I think the other Kingdom Hearts HD stuff, Jared, correct me if I'm wrong, is on PS3.
Oh, I don't ask me to correct you. I don't understand.
I might be wrong.
I don't understand Kingdom Hearts anymore.
I really want to play.
Why
I want to replay.
It sounds really accessible and totally understandable.
I really want to replay at least 1 and 2 because I never finished 2, and I would love to do that on PS4. If I'm not mistaken, I don't know if I can do that, but I'm probably wrong. I should look that up. I'm very tired.
You won't do that.
Okay.
Yakuza?
Yakuza, yeah.
Yay!
First game is getting an HD remaster remake, which looks real pretty. And then there's a new – that's going to have a demo for Yakuza 6 on it.
Mm-hmm.
Jared, what's up with these games? Because I've never gone near them. They are
– they're odd.
Yeah.
Yakuza games are good, and they're good in a way that nothing else is. They're good with – you need to – you're going to have to take a grain of salt with that. They are – the structure is kind of bizarre. It's mission-oriented open world. Mixed up, they get stuff cut out of them in the American versions a lot.
Trailer for the HD remake, a grown man slaps a little girl,
a small
in the face.
Girl, at a bar. That's actually from the original Yakuza. That scene was from the. That's a kind of a famous.
Well, I'm glad
scene
that
from
they're not changing anything. Yeah, keeping it fresh.
Okay, so it's crime melodrama. It's sort of like if GTA were just like utterly self-aware, it would be Yakuza. It'd be like, hey, we're a daytime Korean television drama about the mob, the video game.
I like the idea of like a weird Woody Allen breaking the fourth wall GTA game.
That's kind of what Yakuza sort of feels like. It's just like, we know what we are. This is melodrama, unapologetic. The open worlds tend to be small but full of things to do. Some of the American versions get things kind of there's a lot of interface issues. It's kind of clunky and sort of what we were talking about last week with strange interfaces. But the games are fascinating. They alternate between bizarre violence, melodrama, dress-up doll games, utterly offensive content, and occasionally tremendous role-playing moments.
So Japan.
Interesting.
Yeah, really, really fascinating games that aren't quite like anything else. Yakuza 5 still hasn't come to America, despite being released several years ago in Japan. They keep promising we're going to get
it. Is that the weird zombie-ish one? Or is that...
What, 5? I haven't played it because that hasn't come over, so I don't know. But yeah, it's supposed to come this fall to America, finally. We'll see on PSN. The other 4 have come over, and they are unlike anything else and totally worth your time.
Cool. Possibly the furthest thing from a Japanese self-aware open world game is Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
They
weird
announced
place to announce this.
Yeah, this is. It almost felt like, oh, crap, there's only one conference left before we come out in October, so we have to announce it there. Yeah, they announced Jack the Ripper DLC for Assassin's Creed Syndicate, which is, I mean, like, the minute they said Victorian London, I immediately wanted Jack the Ripper.
Right.
My concern about Jack the Ripper in the Assassin's Creed universe is that you know they're going to be like, oh, he's actually an assassin and the people he killed are all Templars or something. I don't know. Like, I can see this going very badly. I do really like the mood the trailer sets, though. Mm-hmm. I love the key art. It's like Jack the Ripper with like a super fucked up, like face wrap. He looks really scary and weird. But I'm into the idea of this. I just hope they don't make it to Assassin's Creed-y. Mm-hmm. All of that said, they announced this as part of the season pass, which seems kind of, it's like the most by the numbers season pass thing I've seen.
We talked about DLC last week. Really, really crass to announce DLC before a game is released, I think.
And then immediately be like, buy our season pass and pre-order it and buy this edition and get the season pass included.
Yeah, that's kind of like the new movement now. I mean, did you see what they did with Bethesda with Fallout? Where they're just like, buy our season pass, we don't know what we're putting in it yet.
That was kind of like the Batman thing again. Yeah. I mean, Bethesda was at least a little more frank about it, where like Pete Hines was kind of like, hey, like if you don't want to buy this, don't buy it. But it's like, it's available if you do. I at least respect that, because there are people who know they're going to do that.
You also look at like their games, like the Bethesda's track record with DLC. Yeah. It's aside from the horse armor, you know, I think they kind of learned a lesson there. It's sort of
a lot of the Fallout DLC was kind of all over the place.
I liked the Fallout 3 DLC for the most part. I thought the New Vegas DLC was awful.
Yeah.
I did not get into it at all. Especially the first one where we're in the collar and you explode and stuff.
I have a tough time justifying preemptively purchasing a season pass for something that I don't have any idea what's
going on. It's pretty weird that we buy anything before it's out.
Yeah.
Just in general, across the board.
Pre-ordering in general, I agree. And I mean, like, it's this weird arms race where, like, they do this because they need that first week sales figure, I guess. It's almost like how movies are so front-loaded for, like, they really want the opening weekend numbers. That is almost more important than the tale of what they do. It's really interesting.
Short answer, that's because people have, like, it's a yearly, you know, financial fiscal year stuff where they're like, we got to have this done by this point.
Before the quarter ends. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Ubisoft didn't stop there. Jared's real excited. They talked a little bit about For Honor, showed a new trailer, and talked about the samurai class.
Yeah, they showed a samurai guy, the Oni, which is Japanese for an Oni's like a kind of a monster demon.
Oni does everything.
It Oni does. Excellent.
You tangled
my funny bone.
Don't touch me.
There we are.
Both of you need to just hug on the top of a hill and roll away from this conversation.
I would love to hug Andrew on a hill and then roll down it in his warm embrace.
King of the mountain.
Yeah, I'd be good with that. I think that would be very cuddly. But so we got the Oni, and I like this. For Honor looks really cool to me. I think that, it looks like non-crappy Dynasty Warriors, and I'm good with that. Hero versus hero, maybe a little Bushido Blady stuff thrown in. But we got this guy talking about things like
just called it non-crappy. What's that?
Non-crappy Dynasty Warriors.
I mean, then again, they're also revealing. which studio is? It's Ubisoft. It's French for all intents.
I think it's happening in Montreal.
Montreal. Yeah. Okay, so it's a Western game involving samurai, and they're revealing it at TGS. It seems kind of ballsy.
Ubisoft having a presence there.
Check out this non-crappy Dynasty Warriors, and they're all like,
it's built around these kind of battlefield heroes, and facing off in the middle. It's sort of like all the other guys are the backdrop for the movie moment when like Mel Gibson finally finds whoever he's going to kill on that battlefield that he's wanted to kill the whole
movie. Or when Tom Cruise, the last samurai, has his big epic showdown.
Exactly that kind of thing, and then all the other guys are just dying in the background, and this happens, and he stabs you with the American flag or whatever. But
I think
this is like that, except you have that actually
eats
happens
an entire
in a
cherry
movie.
Pie. Mm-hmm. Anyway, kisses his mom on the cheek.
I got tickled. Samurai guy, but I love what they say. Okay, skilled duelist, quick and lethal, and then they say inspires fear. So I'm wondering, is this guy just like, and everybody's like and runs away.
Did they run out of real sentences?
Yeah, I love it. He's got a kunai, which are the cool little, the pointed shuriken. And again, that's a Bushido Blady type weapon. I think I'm just excited about this, the thought of having a dueling game at last.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And I think this is a really interesting, it's the TGS conference in general is interesting because, like you were just saying, it is this weird mix of Western stuff with Eastern stuff, and it's weirdly Bloodborne is in the same conference as Dark Souls, and this is in the same
Japanese,
conference.
But the Japanese, they're not.
Games.
I hear
Jared. You just said a kunai was a pointed shuriken. I would say it's a less pointed shuriken in that it is a throwing knife.
Well, it is a throwing knife, but it also counts as okay. So shuriken just means sharp, like.
No,
like
I'm going to actually you hard
blade.
Right now.
Shuri is hand. Oh, and, forgot.
You
and
just
hand
actually,
is blade.
You just counter actually me.
No, it just means handheld blade. A kunai is a
hey, what's
a
up, dude?
Subclass
How's
of shuriken.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. All right, a little so, tired.
Probably. Anyway, really yeah, Shuri is hand. All right,
miss you too.
It's been good. It's good to see you though.
Yeah, so handheld blade, a kunai is a subclass of shuriken. All right, moving on. But talking about the East meets West thing and mm-hmm. about how bold that is. I remember I had the opportunity. I lived in a town in Japan where they handcraft katana to this day and have been doing it for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's near where Nobunaga lived. It's a steel crafting center. One of the best moments of my life was getting to hold
Hakuna katana.
Okay, that's great. I got to hold a 400-year-old samurai sword that a guy had brought in for repair. And
did you drop it?
No, I didn't. Thank goodness.
It's like
but
that old,
and I had a, you know, has this ray, like, has this ray skin handle. You swing it through the air, and it actually makes a hum like a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just and it feels like death in your hands.
It's like that Hattori Hanzo scene from Kill Bill.
From Kill Bill,
yeah.
But hanging from the end of the handle with this ancient, beautiful ray skin grip is a cartoon hamster on a keychain that the guy that owns the sword has put on there.
That's the best.
That
wow!
There is a wonderful, you know, crossover stuff. East meets West, goofy with traditional. The Japanese don't have nearly as big a problem with that as we do. So, you know, moderation for them is often two extremes. So, yeah. I think something like this works. Actually, I think it's
really interesting. Let's try and get through these last two really
Sorry.
Quick. No, it's all good. Okay, very quickly, Dragon Quest Builders. We had seen this a while ago, and now has a release date in Japan. It's sort of Dragon Quest Minecraft.
Yeah, Minecraft with slimes, that's all we need in the world.
They should have done Slimecraft.
Yeah, Slimecraft, that's really good. And it's on Vita, so yay.
That's missed so opportunity.
No, Slimecraft, that's good.
Just for me to nerd out for 1 second, Danganronpa 3 got announced really interestingly for PS4 as well as Vita. I wonder if they'll bring 1 and 2 to PS4 as well. Really, really weird visual novel series. Super interesting. You very short version is that you're a bunch of high school age kids trapped in a school in the first one, and the idea is a crazy person, or bear in this case, is taking over the school and forces you to kill each other in order to leave. Every death you investigate, it's super interesting. There's a trial at the end. You have to pick who is the murderer.
Okay, so
super smart games.
I've heard about this dumb game series for like 3 years now, and no one's explained it in a way that actually makes it sound as awesome as you just did right there.
It's incredible. Mm-hmm. It's really smart.
People are just like, it's like a book, a Japanese book you read on your Vita with your and I'm like,
I mean, it is, but it's super, super, super interesting.
Yeah,
I love the characters.
Yeah, but high school kids fighting a possessed a demon bear.
Yep. So I don't know what this – I can barely say it. You know, mm-hmm. I know
dang
it's
dang rompums,
the ding dang rom coms.
We used to talk about King Dodongo from Bakurin of Time.
I just knew that it was like it's a good JRPG on Vita. And when I got Metal Gear, I was like, all right, I need a tactical diversion. So I just bought that for my fiance Jen. She texted me this morning. They announced a new Danganronpa game yesterday, which is perfect because I just finished mine. And I got two girls to give me panties. So there we go.
That's one weird thing in the second game. As you up your like social links, people give you their underwear. Very strange. Yeah. Very Japanese. But no, I think you would like it. You would like it aesthetically, Brian, because it's actually really cool.
Because I love bears.
Well, yes. But also every time when you walk into a room,
but hate
it's
high
this
school.
Weird, it's this weird like 2D construction where the room is built in front of you in a second. And it's all in first person. It's super interesting. Can't recommend those games enough. Really, really into them. Please talk to me about them on Twitter because I don't know anyone who likes them.
Sure. Tweeted.
Please be my friend on the computer.
High school bear.
So last thing, something that was missing from the conference was Persona 5. They showed about a minute and a half of new footage in the intro sizzle reel, but then it wasn't mentioned during the show. There was a Persona event Saturday afternoon in Japan, which is like late night Friday Pacific time. That's where I'm guessing we get the release date. Maybe PS2 classics of Persona 3 and 4. That would be cool on PS4. But I do want to say very quickly, Persona 4 Dancing All Night. I've been playing a bunch of it. The embargo just lifted, so I can finally talk about it. I got the Platinum. It is a super, super fun, weird game. Very fan servicey. If you like Persona 4, you can see a bunch of people dancing together. Incredible remixes, like all the songs in the game. I'm not into rhythm games at all, but the story mode is really interesting, mm-hmm. and you actually barely dance in the story mode. Like, there's free dance where you can dance a ton, but the story mode, sorry to use this phrase again, is basically a visual novel.
Oh,
is the story mode
really?
Yeah,
really?
It's
some of the night?
Really interesting.
Why would they call it dancing
a little bit?
And not let you do that?
Well, it's really, I mean, like, the Persona 4 spinoff series, like, Arena and Ultimax and now this are all this weird visual novel format yeah. where you have first-person narration written out on the screen, and then you have kind of these vignette cutscenes, and then randomly fight people or dance or whatever the subject of that spinoff is, but that's not really the focus. Like, the story is.
I am suddenly much more interested in buying this because I love P4G and Persona in general, but I stink at rhythm games. So I thought this would be a bad pick for me.
And it's also, it reminded me of Guitar Hero way back in the day where you start on easy because I'm like, I don't play guitar, and you just have three notes. And then you're like, okay, like, I'm getting good enough, I'll try normal. And then you're like really good at normal, and you're like, I'm just going to try the easiest song on hard difficulty. And you'd like have that sense of progression.
If this job doesn't work out for you, you need to work at like a video game store. And when people come in and they try to ask,
what
you
a far fall,
it would be a dark. Things would be rough.
Not there's anything wrong with working at a video game store, I like that. Like, your ambitious career path for me is like.
Well, no, it's my if everything goes horribly awry.
Okay, that's fair.
But you're really good at explaining video games that I think people are otherwise are extremely confused.
You could also just lie, and we wouldn't really be able to call you on it.
That's
sure.
True.
I just had a really weird reaction that I've never had when someone's talking about a game.
You're sexually aroused.
No, not yet. But you just said you don't have to dance, but dance is in the title. And I think the last time I heard that was in middle school when someone's like, "Oh no, it's you don't have to dance at the dances."
Yeah, the boys hang out over here, and
like,
the girls hang out over there.
You can just hang out. Also, they have a room full of games, and I'm like, "Oh, go on!" Like, that's really weird to hear that. Like, a game that has dancing in the title. Night.
Yep.
But you're like, you don't have to dance. I'm like,
you don't even have to dance some of the night.
That feels like I just a slight interest in like a social event that I otherwise was totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's
real strange.
It's weird.
I was going to try this out, but I'm thrilled to hear about it now.
You know what's a really important thing is the dog naming contest.
Oh yeah, because of our email. Yay! That was such a good idea.
I got probably no joke. 500 yeah, tweets of 500. Dog names and dog yeah. pictures, yeah. and then you guys got emails.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. And Brian was so grumpy about it. It was cute.
I love that today. I'm just walking by Brian's desk, and I just hear him yelling at Max, like, "I had to search for dog, and then check all the emails marked dog, and delete them. And I like my dog emails."
Which I have a problem with because generally, I think if you get an email about a dog, it's probably an email you want to read.
But so many of these were good. I mean, I was laughing out loud.
Not really.
A lot of them were good.
Brian, just set up filters. Just have a folder that just says Beyond.
Especially
and it's,
on Gmail. Skip
it's
the so
inbox.
Easy.
Max, I understand all that. It doesn't save the fact that this was a bad idea.
Okay, it was
No one at a job should get hundreds of emails that just say, "The dog," and you open it up and it says, "Bark." That shouldn't be a thing. It should never be a thing. Even having to click those with your finger
I want to call out
a half a second.
Some of our listeners for not listening hard enough. And yeah. We said just make the subject of the email. Yeah. We were very, very specific, so it makes it easy to look through everything. But some people who are like, "First of all, I would like to say that I am a fan of the show. Thank you for listening. Thank you." Okay, but yeah. Then going in and be like, "After careful consideration, I have decided to name the dog." It's just write the name.
There was the really polite guy that wrote in and was like, "I just heard again listening that there was a cutoff. I'm
yeah, some
so
of you guys, it
sorry.
Was, there was a little hiccup where it was sent the same email again with a different subject.
Yeah, he's like, "I'm so sorry I did that.
I don't want to get any guys' case. I'm just
no,
I'm
they
just,
were
I'm just
nice.
Goofing.
That sounds kind of adorable.
Yeah, he was
of,
sweet.
A lot
I was
of
really
emails about dogs. I think we got multiple submissions for a couple of sort of more obvious ones, which I love a whole lot. It was hard not to pick these, but Rex.
Yeah, Metal Gear Rex.
I always like the fact that Metal Gear Solid as a title, when you consider that the original is stars a guy named Solid Snake. It's sort of like, it's like Wreck-It Ralph, you know. It's like
I'm gonna solid it.
It's like Super Spy Steve. Like, yeah. Just it's kind of like a really, it's a weird nomenclature.
Yep, sure.
So I like the idea of Metal Gear Rex being a dog that fights robots. Other one was Big Paws. Like,
yeah, that's
big boss.
Yeah,
boss.
Yeah,
that
was definitely
I
think somebody
like that
should
one.
Have.
I didn't get that pun until you said that. No,
yeah, I like that one. Yo, I thought Big Boss was cute.
I'm gonna come back to you in a second, Brian, when we announce the winner, who yeah. you were in support of. We got some other ones that I liked a lot. Philip Mudd sent Sniper Wolf, which I thought was cute.
That's really good. That's really good.
Daniel,
I think we should send Philip Mudd a consolation prize just for having that had to go through life with that name.
Send him
no, it's a, that's a tough name.
I like that name.
Philip Mudd sounds like when you poop your pants.
No, he's like Harry. He's like Harry.
Thank you for listening. You have a very funny name. I'm sorry. This is all I have.
I'm sorry about Brian. Daniel Urey said the Kurt Russell Terrier, which I like a lot.
Yeah, that's good.
But you can clearly see it's not a terrier. Anyway, Sean Flynn had another kind of throwback to a boss, which was the furry. instead of the Fury.
That just made me think of people in suits with holes cut in inappropriate places.
Yep.
Chris Flanagan had Sergeant Slobber.
That's good.
Which is like Sergeant Slaughter, 80s action hero military
instead
man.
Instead of that name, it's a dog that drools.
Real good.
Bruce
Snupik, Rollover Ocelot. That was a very close call contender. Rollover Ocelot I like because it just sounds like you're saying the name of a character wrong. And the winner is Dennis Burns, who has Diamond, in the rough, spelled like the noise a dog makes.
R-U-F-F.
Yeah.
Diamond in the rough. Right. Nah, I love it. Yeah. Okay, so congratulations.
And if you're mad that we picked a dumb winner, I'm sorry. Better luck next time.
Yeah, stay tuned.
It's also
the next
a contest for a dog name.
Really
in a video
smart
game.
Contest we do.
Yeah.
And thanks to Yuichi for sending that code over.
Yeah,
too,
yeah
sure.
That's awesome. Shout out to Yuichi.
From Konami.
Dennis, I hope you enjoy the game.
Man, I really need to get Metal Gear in play.
You really do.
Yeah.
Well, if you had come up with a good damn dog name this week, maybe you would have had a chance at winning the code.
Dog and.
I think we should have dog naming contests for every game we do. Regardless
I think so too.
Yeah.
We could do it for Fallout.
I think that you should be the one to pick the winners. I think it should only be. Just it's Baltano
IGN.com. I'm going to send a screenshot to Guinness Book of World Records for the world's largest recycling bin on a computer filled with the most emails.
Those are going directly to the trash. It's so cute what makes you angry because these huge things can happen and not bother you at all.
I love here's what I love. I love this podcast. I love talking to my friends. I love dogs. I love Metal Gear. I love our audience. I hate the way all of this came. It's taking five of my favorite ingredients in the world and making poop soup out of it.
Poop soup.
Well, you start with poop, and then you have a guy come along and put an onion in it and a carrot, and by the end, it's really good.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you are. So
it's like when somebody throws up a good meal.
Delicious.
Just make it stop.
Oh, gosh.
You know that financing show where the guy smashes coffee mugs with a baseball bat?
Yeah.
And I feel like shouting poop soup is something
that's
you
really good. I like the analogy of throwing up a good meal.
Didn't he get fired for lying?
I don't watch TV. I don't know what they do on there.
Are you talking about Mad Money?
Yeah. He's like, buy 50,000 shares of poop soup.
I love that he's on
you can't do that. That's really irresponsible.
I love he's on Arrested Development randomly.
I know.
I hear we have a new Essential 50.
Yeah, are we doing Essential 50 this week?
Okay, fine.
Let's come back to that.
Can we talk about Resident Evil real quick? I'm really disappointed by this.
That was really good. Yep.
As we've seen in the last few years, a lot of video games have been around for a very long time, and we're seeing a lot of anniversaries.
Mm-hmm.
Right now is the 30th anniversary of Super Mario. Out of that, we're getting Super Mario Maker. Awesome, incredible, delightful way to sort of celebrate. Nintendo's been less good with a lot of that stuff. Like Metroid, they kind of dropped the ball on. Zelda, they were pretty good with. Resident Evil.
Dropped the Morph Ball.
They dropped the Morph Ball.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Resident Evil is up there with some of my favorite video game memories of all time. It's one of the greatest video game franchises ever. I realize that it's been completely hit or miss the last few years. Although, leading up to this day and age, we've gotten the HD remake of Resident Evil Remake, which is probably the best Resident Evil game.
And 2 coming.
We got the remake of Resident Evil 2 coming, which is something we never thought would happen. Mm-hmm. We even got a remake of Resident Evil 0, which is like a pretty damn good Resident Evil game, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of on the tail end of the tank-controlled ones. So having to see this big 20th anniversary Resident Evil thing, I was really, really hoping for the best. I know that Resident Evil 6 was completely off the rails. It was a wreck. 5 did not grab me. 4 is one of my favorite video games, probably my top 5 video games ever made.
Mm-hmm.
They announced last night that a new Resident Evil game is coming. And it's basically focusing on the least favorite part of the Resident Evil series, which is the nameless idiots that run around in Umbrella Corp costumes with shotguns and guns and shoot zombies.
It reminded me of, like, right after Arkham City came out, there was, like, a Batman shooter game that came out on XBLA.
Gotham City Imposters.
Gotham City Imposters.
Yeah.
That's what this game reminds me of.
Well, there was also Operation Raccoon City.
Yeah, which
is
the same thing. Like, this
was
just like competitive?
Yeah, it was like a Call of Duty first person, and you would run around and pick up, like, herbs that you would shoot into yourself. And I'm reloading.
And it was third person. It was
I remember thinking more Audrey review that game.
This has worked another. But Dead Space Extraction for the Wii was fun.
Yeah.
The rail shooter, that was actually really well done.
And that was done. Capcom's done rail shooters before.
Right.
You know, like, it worked out to variable degrees of success. I actually like some of the rail shooters they've done.
Yeah.
This, to me, I mean, had you dropped this last year, I'd be like, this is a weird diversion. But to drop this as part of the anniversary or like the big sort of, like, it's sort of like like celebrating your anniversary with your wife by eating poop soup. burning down your apartment.
You're
going
to get so much poop soup mailed to you now.
Yeah, good. It's good. It's illegal to mail poop soup, so you take that up, with
Stop
the people
saying over that word.
So this is a huge bummer for me, man. Like as a Resident Evil fan, this is exactly what I don't want. Like, and just as I thought they're sort of getting it, like if you look at what Capcom just did with Mega Man, mm-hmm. like that the
Legacy Collection.
Yeah. Which is awesome. It's on like pretty much every platform. There's like tons of like art stuff in there and old character sketches.
Oh, we give it a 9. I mean, I was privileged to review that. That game was superb.
They're also doing
done.
Really cool stuff with their merchandising. Like they're going all out with Mega Man stuff right now.
Yeah, but it's really still cool to see. Bigger Capcom problem of like everything Capcom right now is remakes. And I mean, like, yeah, Street Fighter V looks cool. And I'm sure it'll be good, but it's still another sequel. Like, there's nothing new coming out of Capcom, I feel like. I would love to see a really... Like, when Capcom came on stage and said they had a new game, I got really excited, and then it was a Resident Evil game, and then it was a disappointing Resident Evil game. And it just, like, I would love to see something out of Capcom that's cool and new and different right now. Like, Deep Down was announced 3 years ago at the PS4 reveal event. We've heard literally... Like, that game
is 3 years ago?
Anthony Gallegos wrote that article.
Wow.
Like, two jobs ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's how long ago that was. Wow. Yeah. exactly. Yeah. He runs a whole village.
They've all got wives of their own.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me, though. Like, I want to see Capcom do something interesting, whether that's with Resident Evil or in general. Like, where is RE7? Like, let's at least see
something. These are, like, the guys that invented the... not really invented, but sort of, like... kind of at the time perfected the mainstream zombie video game genre, right? Yeah. And now it's been done to death. Everyone's done different things. We saw Zombie get ported this year. There was, you know, I lost track of how many zombie games there are. But there's like, they're fast-running ones. There's the parkour one, Dying Light. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so many different ways to sort of interpret that. And to see Capcom, the guys who pretty much like created that for what it is, and not only walk away from it with like 5 or 6 Resident Evil games in a row that just became sort of like action games, including like the back half of RE4, which a lot of people forget, but to completely just drop that now and just lose all the tension that comes with the zombie genre.
Well, even the Last Dead Rising game.
I feel like they don't understand the appeal of their own properties.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got some focus group or some spreadsheet somewhere that says what sells and what doesn't, and they're like, let's play to that as opposed to just kind of drowning it out. And
The action games sell better than the non-action games, so that's the message they're hearing.
Well, isn't RE5 the best-selling one still? Yeah. And that's the whole thing.
And that's the one that like had, you know, it was basically open battlefield areas with character swapping and machine guns and stuff like that.
That felt like kind of the beginning of the precipitous decline.
Oh, yeah. And RE5 was a vast step down.
Like, the first half of 4 is still some of the most tense. Like, it wasn't really, like, jump scare as much, but there was that sort of impending fear of being, like, I'm in this small town with a guy with a chainsaw and, like, these psycho... Yeah.
Oh, no, it was a perfect combination of you were just capable enough to feel more powerful than you ever had.
Yep.
And it was still just tense enough through most of that game to feel like you were constantly in danger.
Yeah. And I feel like tension. Making these like third-person shooters and first-person like sort of multiplayer, like arena-based, like they're completely missing the point. They're completely missing the tension. Like it's just taking the brand name and putting on something. Like this is the Metroid Prime Federation Force of Resident Evil.
Look at something like, I mean, we've got lots of shooters and we've got lots of horror games. Horror games are doing pretty well right now. Yeah, like Alien Isolation, for instance. Like that, did that do okay or was that kind of a...
It did pretty well. It did pretty well.
I mean, surprisingly, considering it's a tense, like a, you know, and it's a recognized property.
Yep.
And Resident Evil kind of like it at its core, it's you have guns and there's scary stuff. And maybe it's trying to balance that is too tricky in kind of the modern
landscape.
Well,
it's interesting seeing...
I was going to say...
Like, you have to strip people's powers away, but...
You're totally right about not only the genre stuff, but like or zombie stuff, but the horror genre movement in video games right now, especially with like Let's Plays and YouTubes. And
what's happening with Until Dawn right now?
It's huge.
PT was big. But it's interesting that even Mikami moved on and made like Evil Within. Like, I mean, like that's like... The spirit of Resident Evil has kind of been pulled out of it, and it has become this.
And Evil Within
sort
of felt like Resident Evil 4.5 with a lot of the psychological stuff that almost made it into Resident Evil 4.
But it ought to be possible to distill the essence of what made the early games good and then recontextualize that for where technology and tastes are right now and create something wonderful. Horror is timeless when done well. Mm-hmm. Good horror is hard to do. I mean, horror movies are generally bad, even though I love them. There's very few really good ones.
And then
but you can do it, and Capcom has the resources to pull it off.
And there's things like Five Nights at Freddy and all these random
Fear
things
the
that
Walking
pop
Dead
up.
Premiered a month ago. It was the biggest television premiere in history, and that show is unobjectively bad. It is not a good show.
Whereupon you look at something like Penny Dreadful, and somebody's doing it right now. That is a solid. Have you watched that?
Yeah.
Oh man, that is a solid TV.
I watched like 3/4 of the first season.
Oh, it's the second season. I think is better. It's really good.
Yeah,
it's
a really Strain, which is again not a great show.
Yeah. I also just want to interject and plug. Brian did an interview with Taron Killam from SNL at PAX.
Oh, that's right.
Where they just talked about Resident Evil Memories for like 5 minutes. And it's really weird.
It's really weird to walk up to like a guy you look up to like in comedy and then be like, hey, remember those weird white gorillas in the basement of Zero? And he's like, yeah, totally. I'm like, let's talk about that.
Those go in the category of stuff that you like to talk about a lot.
It's really
there's things that Brian likes to talk about. There's William Howard Taft, the president who died in a bathtub.
I actually didn't know his full name.
I might be wrong. I forgot the middle name. And there's the snake on Dagobah that Brian is convinced Yoda has sex with.
And there's
I don't think William
and
Howard Taft actually died in a bathtub. He just got
stuck in a bathtub.
Apocryphally, he got stuck in one.
But let's all agree that was kind of the beginning of the decline.
Okay, yeah. It's actually worse.
But also, I've heard that story was just a political creation by his enemies.
Do you guys know about that sandwich that Elvis Presley ate?
Yes.
Yeah, the fried banana and the pickle.
The Fool's Gold loaf?
So, yes.
8,000 calorie sandwich?
Was that poop soup?
No, he dropped some poop soup after that.
Yeah.
But he flew to Denver one night for an 8,000 calorie peanut butter jelly sandwich and had bacon in it.
Let me back this up. So he was hanging out at Graceland with a couple of cops because Elvis really liked cops.
Yeah,
and he's hanging out with them. And he was telling them about this one diner in the middle of nowhere, like wherever it was out on some outskirts where they had a thing called the Gold Brick, which was an entire loaf of bread hollowed out, filled with peanut butter, a jar of peanut butter, a jar of jelly, and a side of bacon, and then deep fried.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, man, this is a really, really good sandwich. We got to try it. And these cops are like, yeah, it was I guess. And he's like, hold on a second. He calls up his private jet, gets in his private jet, flies to wherever this is, gets out of the jet, gets in a limo, drives to the diner, and eats two of them.
Did he take the cops with him?
Yeah, he brought
them
with him.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
okay.
He ate two of them?
He ate two of them?
Yeah, he ate two of them. I don't know how many.
16,000 calories.
Yeah.
That's enough food for a month.
So anyway, you like...
It's not enough food for a month.
Yeah, you get
of a month.
That's about a week for a USRDA, It's also enough to kill you, I think.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, that's an amazing story.
Who's the... What's his name? Stephen Hawking. So for the longest time, while we're here and getting in my brain, I thought Stephen Hawking's name was Stephen J. Hawking, like a 70s basketball player.
That's awesome.
And for the longest
time, Dr.
J? I read this interview with Stephen J. Hawking the other day, and people were like, that's not his middle of the
He could
show.
Have like a little ejector spring in his chair so he could dunk, just like,
hey guys, I'm Stephen J. Hawking, and I'm here to tell you about science through a robot voice.
All right.
That'd be awesome.
Hey, so...
He doesn't sound like a robot anymore.
I have to go to a meeting.
Okay. That's a good excuse to leave your friends who are hanging out having a great time.
I don't want to go to a meeting.
Okay,
I have a meeting right now. It's weird.
Yeah, that was
why is my watch between 2 days? Does anyone know what day it is?
Yeah, it's
Tuesday. Wednesday.
Thursday. It's
right.
Fratter Day.
You want to go?
I don't want to go.
Do you want to say goodbye to our fine listeners who are, you know?
I love you, fine listeners.
Hey, fine listeners.
What's everybody doing? What's everybody working on? What are you guys doing?
Right now? Well, I want to end the episode. No,
you guys.
I'm not trying to prematurely end it. Yeah, keep going.
Keep going. How long have we been going for?
That long. Keep going. Keep going. I'm going to have to exit, but you guys should keep going.
All right, get the hell out of here, you damn it.
Before we go, Jared, you are bringing an Essential 50 entry.
I'm not saying I want to end the podcast. You shouldn't end the podcast. You should keep going.
No.
We're going to get the hell out.
Say yay or nay, and then you bounce.
Get out.
Okay, cool.
What's the end?
Silent Hill 2.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Totally.
All right.
Yeah. Cool. Get off of the show.
I think Chloe would murder me if I said no to that.
Okay.
I love you guys. I love you listeners.
Yep.
Probably going to get some food after my meeting if you want
to go.
You can tweet poop soup at me. You can tweet at me about Danganronpa.
Yeah.
Thank you guys. I love you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
See you,
Andrew.
See
ya. I love you.
See you soon. Have a great day.
Gosh.
You too.
God, I still love that analogy you had the other day.
Stand that guy.
What
I'm
a little
so glad
rat
gone.
He is.
I love that guy. I want to roll down a hill with him in my arms.
Yeah. Well, I was basically trying to get you guys away from me.
Oh, really?
No, I love you. You're great.
Yeah, so Silent Hill 2. Yeah.
No, Silent Hill 2. This is an old PlayStation game. A lot of people may not have played it. You know, this is way back in the day. So really quickly, we talk a lot about games that are rated mature, you know, M for mature. Da, da, da. This is one of the
Peggy 13.
Peggy 13, exactly. Mature themes usually mean Kratos causing somebody to take their shirt off. You know, that's most of what we get with mature themed games. Silent Hill 2, despite some
I'm sorry.
Conjuring a weird image there.
Yeah. I just realized that the European rating system, it sounds like a caveman saying how old his daughter is. It's just like, Peggy 13. Peggy have birthday cake.
Oh, that's so good.
Peggy 18. Peggy play FIFA.
Peggy start high school next year.
So, you know those
Peggy need prom day.
You know those text text adventure games. No, there's that's so good.
Why?
There's a whole text adventure game built around that.
Peggy need
like,
husband.
You know, like you have like the verb now. You know. The like do this thing, like, you know, get pig or whatever. That's part of the game. That's the syntax. It's like you can only use two. You can use a verb and you use a target. And the whole game is about a caveman. And it's about trying to catch a pig. So it's like, wow. Get pig. And it responds like, pig, get away. That one smart pig. And you're just trying to get the pig.
Peggy smart pig.
Yes, that's how the whole text adventure works.
Okay,
so. All right, sorry.
Yes. So I'm really sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is the Essential 50. We haven't done this bit in a while.
The Essential 50 is 50 PlayStation games that we think you ought to play.
Yeah.
One of these is Silent Hill 2. Silent Hill 2 is a survival horror game. It's from back in the day. And it does handle something well that most games don't, and that's sex. Even though there's not any sex going on in the game, Silent Hill 2 approaches sexual themes in a very complicated and frightening way. It deals with the fact that we fundamentally are, from the time we hit puberty, both excited by and a little bit scared of sex.
Yep.
And it latches onto that in a non-overt way that you do not see coming. Silent Hill 2, for a lot of the game, you don't really know what you're trying to accomplish. You're in the spooky town, but there's not really some quest or somebody you got to rescue or not really. I mean, there's stuff going on, but you're just kind of getting moved forward and you're this guy in the town. You don't really know much about who you are. And then you start encountering these really frightening psychosexual images, and you're like, where does this fit with what's going on? Eventually you end up in a blue velvet scene where you're in a closet and you're watching a monster rape another monster, and you're stuck there having to see this happen, and then you're like, oh, I feel icky, but I kind of want to look, but I don't. And then you get to a twist in the plot if you follow the game through a certain – there's multiple endings, one of which involves a talking dog.
Spoilers.
But
Yeah. You are so bad about spoilers. In these you should play these games that I'm going to tell you the entirety of right now.
But I'm not going to spoil this moment. But there comes a time in the game where I think better than any video game ever, the topic of sex, relationships, and the savage complexity that goes into what happens between people who decide to spend their lives together – is brought to the forefront in a unpredictable, shocking, and gruesome way. And I remember sitting there watching this happen and feeling – video games never – feeling dirty. Mm-hmm. Not for playing the game because the game's great. But like I have inhabited this kind of empty shell guy. At this point, they do a really good job of letting you imprint yourself on him. And I'm like, oh – and you're complicit in something and it doesn't spell it out overtly and you're like, maybe I did it for this reason, but maybe for this. And
did you kiss the dog?
No. The dog ending is just an alternate.
Got it.
But so that was a long spiel. Talking around it makes it hard. Guys, so just play this.
I've heard – like I've never played Silent Hill 2.
Yeah.
I was way too scared of it when it came out. And I've like kind of seen bits and pieces of it here and there, but I've always kind of been like, I'll play this one day. The HD remaster, I remember, was like a total nightmare because they decided that the fog that kind of helped with the atmosphere was an artifact of a small draw distance or something. So they decided to get rid of the fog, which
it,
kind of...
Yeah, it was an artifact of a small draw distance, but that's what made it work. I mean, you're not in a lot of danger in Silent Hill 2. It's kind of hard to die, actually, once you know what you're doing. Most of the enemies are not all that dangerous in most of the parts. But yeah, I know it's polygonal and rough and some of the voice acting's terrible, but the best way to go back to it is to go back to the original at this point, in my opinion.
Cool.
And I know this. A lot of people aren't going to do it, but don't forget, you know, every PlayStation but the PlayStation 4 can play PS1 games. So go back and do this and find that good, true moment, because there's multiple paths you can go down and it can end a lot of different ways. But when you figure out why you're there and what's going on, and it does a great job of spelling out just enough to make you feel icky and not enough to make you feel certain, and it's the uncertainty that fits the whole theme of sexual uncertainty in the game that is just brilliant.
That's
very
one of the things I think ambiguity in just in fiction is incredibly important. And there is a, for lack of a better term, there is a really nerdy habit of trying to answer every question and trying to kind of organize information and not have that kind of that ball up in the air. You know, like I know a lot of people were like, they want to know what's in Marcellus Wallace's suitcase. They want to know what the end of Inception is, and they're going to work out these complex theories. But it's like, it's kind of a Schrodinger's cat thing where you shouldn't know. It exists.
I mean, they made three Star Wars movies specifically explaining why we didn't need to know any of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it actually actively makes things worse is to lose ambiguity in storytelling.
Midichlorians.
I mean, the best part of Alien is we don't see the alien, you know?
Right.
It's like, I kind of like the... That's a hell of a sales pitch for Silent Hill 2. So.
Yeah, and it works well. You know what happened enough to feel terrified and not enough to know just how terrified you should feel. And that works so well.
Hmm.
And very, very, very few... products in our medium have ever accomplished that.
Cool.
Before or since.
So that's on the
Thumbs
Essential
up.
50. Do we have anything else we want to talk about at all? What are you guys playing these days?
I'm switching back and forth between Metal Gear and Mario Maker, which is really weird because they're very similar in a lot of ways in that they completely
play as a white guy.
Play as a white guy who's got some facial hair.
You can play as a different character, but you got to go in the settings.
You have a weird pet you can ride. it's either a horse or a dinosaur.
I really like the image of Snake riding a dinosaur across the desert. I hope that happens.
There's a female protagonist that doesn't speak much.
Mm-hmm.
This list is running out of steam. No, but I just really love how you can sort of, and you don't really get this with movies as much because movies take 90 minutes to consume, but how you can jump back and forth between two games. Like, mm-hmm. I try to stay away from playing two games at the same time, but it's interesting to do this right now because it just shows both of these games started in the 80s and they're still going now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing how each one has sort of evolved in their own directions, but still kind of maintained what they originally were, is really impressive to me to kind of see that, like, to bounce back and forth between a game like Metal Gear, which, like, pretty much is very sandboxy in that you have end goal and you can diagonal and crisscross and spaghetti your way all around to get to that end goal, which even then that end goal could be totally screwed up. And Mario Maker, which is basically like the same thing, like you have a flagpole you need to reach and any number of things can happen in between how you get there and how you get to the end. And seeing like the user generated stuff in Mario Maker is really smart.
Yeah. You get so many angry emails that we're talking about a Nintendo game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about two games that I'm playing right now in our vernacular. Like, I think it's
they're both games that start out on Nintendo platforms. Yeah. One of them became famous for being a PlayStation property,
exactly.
And now it's on four different systems. So,
I think that's cool. I don't know if that's going to happen. Like, I feel like in mid November when I'm playing Tomb Raider and Fallout at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'll have that other similar moment where I'm bouncing from one to the other.
Well,
it's very weird to do that.
One big problem with games is that they're so often compared to movies and TV in that they're a visual medium. But the reality is they're also a really cerebral medium, and you really invest a lot of yourself in them, in which that way they're much more like books.
Yeah.
And the rate at which you read a book requires a kind of a certain amount of – like, you can sort of fall asleep reading a book, but the book isn't going to finish itself if you do that. You're always going to pick up where you left off.
Yeah.
Same goes with games. You know, you kind of have to move that character forward. That's an interesting point about kind of jumping between games. I did a really intense Metal Gear mission, and I jumped into Disney Infinity.
Right.
Which is, at this point, surprisingly, I was kind of blown away about how complex of a kids game that is.
But it's a good like palate cleanser from playing.
Oh, totally. Now,
and that's a profound analogy you just made. I really like that the book thing. That's really cool. I've never thought of it that way.
I think that's why. I mean, not to get too deep into it, but I think it's why a lot of people have problems with female protagonists in games as a predominantly male-driven audience that consumes games because they have trouble putting themselves into it. Like when I read a book and the main character's male, I associate with him better, and I start putting in all of my own tendencies into his brain and his actions. And when he's doing something, I go, "Well, this is what he looks like." You know, you create characters in your head, and that's why when books become movies, people have a lot of problems with casting all the time because it's never there's no right answer, right?
Yeah.
There's things that come close, but there's never like, "Oh, that's the perfect thing," because everyone has their own projection on it. And in Metal Gear, the way I'm playing that is that I'm playing that the way I would handle that situation to an extent, given the fact that it's a completely ridiculous world. But I'm characterizing that character in a way I see fit for myself. And I think when people see a game like Tomb Raider, they're like, well, I'm not a woman.
Now that's
I don't know who this is or what I would do in this scenario.
That's fascinating for me because generally when I play games, if there's an option for a female protagonist, I'll usually play one. It's because I like trying to project something different than myself.
It's sort of an
identity escapism.
That's the exact word I was going to use because I think that that's very important for me. Like, it's one thing. I think in certain types of books, you can put yourself into the character, but like in sort of fantasy escapism, like it's so far from your reality that that's the point.
Yeah.
Like you are trying to actively get away from something that it's so unique to your own life.
You know,
I think like when I play Tomb Raider, I'm like, well, I've never been to the top of a Tibetan monastery as it's crumbling, so I don't know what that's like. So yeah, I'll be a girl.
Yeah.
Because this is so far from my own reality that who cares at this point?
Another thing is also point of view. You know? Like a first-person game, you're going to feel – like I was just thinking about this. I was playing Metal Gear and my fiancé was watching me and I was just in the helicopter. And I think there was sort of a cut scene with Quiet doing something and the camera started moving. And she's like, who are you seeing this from? Whose perspective is this? And I was like – it's a fake cameraman.
Yeah.
And then you think about it, and I was kind of like, I screw up at Metal Gear all the time, and I get caught, and it's because somebody, you know, behind me doesn't see me. But the reality is that I can control where the camera is completely,
right.
Which is such a bizarre concept because it's like if you were playing it first person, like first person stealth sucks because you don't have peripheral vision,
yeah.
You know? But then it's sort of like, what? You're not really playing as Snake. You're playing as a camera guy who's telling him where to go.
Yeah,
you know?
I was thinking that exact same thing. I was ducked behind a small like sandbag wall in Metal Gear, and I spun the camera 360 degrees around me. And I was like, that actually kind of breaks it for me. I mean, I know it's important because it helps the game, because otherwise you get caught constantly. But that kind of breaks it for me.
I can't qualify why, but Thief somehow managed to pull that off, and I don't know why. It did pull off first person stealth, and it didn't feel awkward.
Weird. The new one?
No, the old one.
The original.
Thief 2 especially. Okay, Thief 2 would be the
gold
standard.
Well, that's what a lot of people claim that Dishonored kind of was the successor.
Yeah, and I can't figure out why, though. I don't have a mechanical explanation. I've never studied it, but it does totally work, and it totally doesn't in Metal Gear. I
didn't think about the cameraman thing. It's really interesting. One of the first sort of 3D games ever made was Super Mario 64, and the game starts with – and I don't know who's filming him, but it starts with a shot of Lakitu – in a cloud holding a camera, and it pulls back down and you zooms out and you see behind Mario and you go, oh, Lakitu's filming this entire game. Like, they answered that question in 1996 by going, this game has a cameraman, we're going to show him to you.
Yeah.
But no game has really done that since.
Well, like, they could make
very
that
odd.
Well,
that
Mario's
really,
had this
it'd be a really cool mechanic where there is the camera is a cameraman and you have to sort of protect him.
Yeah, or even now
enemies
you could just,
can run into the camera
didn't,
and
didn't
knock it
Michigan
over.
Do that the Grasshopper game for the PS2, the horror game? I think they did.
Oh, I think
like
so
that. I think they did something.
Was that, who made that?
Suda.
Yeah, but
I think it actually played with that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you could just basically have like a little droid following you in the air. Like, you could justify that any way. You know, that could be a drone robot that's filming the entire game for you. Like, but they never baked that in. And that's really interesting because I know when you're specifically in the helicopter in Metal Gear and you bring the dog, who's like one of the only pets you're allowed to bring. It sucks you can't put the horse in there. I always want that. He's just there when you show up. But you and the dog are in the helicopter together, and it zooms to your perspective where you're looking at the dog, but you can also rotate around where it shows Snake sitting over there with the little cassette icon over him, and you're like, is this dog cameraman? Is this dog man camera time?
That would be amazing.
Right. And it's really interesting to think about that kind of stuff because cameras are in every game and you don't think about who's controlling them.
No, you don't.
Yeah. Anyway, that got deep. Yeah, we got deep for a second.
Thanks for rocking
that kind of compensated for the poop soup. Sorry about the poop soup, everyone listening at home. If you want to follow us on Twitter, and which is a kind of a poop soup of its own of social media,
I like Twitter.
I'm Max Scoville on there. Brian is Agent Bizzle.
That's right.
Jared is Petty, Jared. And the late, the great Andrew Goldfarb is Garfep. If you want to talk to him about Damba Rum Bum Bum.
He's like Tiny Tim. I see an empty chair and a pair of crutches by the door.
We'll be so back next week. If you want to email us, we are just beyond at IGN. Please don't send us dog names. We have more than enough of those to go around.
Yep.
A lot of you guys wanted to name your dogs after Brian, which was kind of funny.
That's fine.
And of course, there is the Podcast Beyond Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond.
Yep.
Is that it? Cool.
Yep.
On that note, Beyond!
Beyond.
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 Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond. Beyond.
Goodbye.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.